Welcome to the Motherhood Podcast, where I lift the lid on the real, raw, and honest stories of motherhood. I'm your host, Samantha Morell. Storytelling is a fundamental part of the human experience. Hearing the challenges and struggles that others have encountered and overcome helps us make sense of our own lives and fosters a feeling of connectedness and inclusion. But today, we mother largely in isolation and have been robbed of essential parts of the mothering experience. I hope these stories will make you feel less alone. I also hope that they inspire and empower you to mother your own unique way, to support you on your path of thriving in motherhood and beyond. We're all in it together. Let's do this. Hello, and welcome to the very first episode of the Motherhood Podcast. I'm so excited to be here sharing the stories of motherhood with you. In today's episode, I talk with Alison Ryan. Alison shares her experience of intense rage and anger after the birth of her second daughter. It's an emotion that is almost universally felt by mothers, but is rarely spoken about openly and is shrouded in so much guilt and shame. Alison discusses how the rage and anger manifested and her breaking point as the catalyst for her to start putting her own needs first. This started her on a journey to fostering kindness and compassion to herself, leading to being the calmer mother she is today. Remember, you're not a bad mother for feeling these normal human emotions. You're a mother with needs that are not being met. I hope you enjoy this episode. Here it is. I'm joined here today by Alison Ryan, who joins us from Minneapolis in Minnesota, where she lives with her husband, two young daughters, and her corgi. That was important to mention. Alison's a mentor for mothers who are coming out of the fog of early motherhood. She helps angry, resentful mums prioritise their own needs to feel capable, confident, and empowered. Alison's here to talk to us today about anxiety and rage that she felt after the birth of her second daughter. So Alison, I hope that was a suitable introduction to you and the amazing work you do. Could you tell us a bit more about that, the experience you had with the rage and anxiety after the birth of your second daughter?
Yes. Thank you so much, Sam, for inviting me on your beautiful podcast. I'm so honored to be here and to share a little bit about my own experience in motherhood. So like you said, I live here in Minnesota, and we have now an 8.5-year-old daughter and a 6 and almost a half-year-old daughter, Samantha and Juliet. And I was home full time with my girls, and that wasn't something I had initially planned on. But after the birth of our first daughter, I thought, I just can't go back to work. And I really leaned in hard to being a quote unquote perfect mother, according to what I had learned and experienced from my own mother being a stay-at-home mom of four when I was growing up. My first was born in 2013. And about 2.5 years later, her sister was born. And Juliet was born in November, which in Minnesota can be a really, and actually she was born in Iowa, which is just south of us, but it was a really challenging time for me to have a baby. And multiple reasons for that. I was home full time still with a 2.5-year-old who is now, as I look back, still a baby herself. My husband was starting a new role. It was getting to be the winter months, so it was cold and it was dark. And I was absolutely overwhelmed and exhausted having an infant and a 2.5-year-old. And shortly thereafter, her birth fell into just a really heavy, I would say at that point, postpartum depression. And my journey through that is a little bit, and I shouldn't say unique because I'm sure other mothers experience this. But I knew that something was not quite right away. And I reached out to my midwives. I had home births with both of my girls and really beautiful, empowering home births. My first was 7.5 pounds. My second was 10. So, you know, it was an experience and a journey for both of them. But despite having very beautiful and empowering home births, I still found myself completely overwhelmed. So I ended up seeking out acupuncture. And that helped. And the fog kind of lifted. And our lives continued, and we decided that we would move from Iowa to Minnesota. And we did that the following summer. So by the fall, when my daughters were 3 and 9 months, we had moved to a new state. I had lost connection to my community. I had lost what was like our routine or regular, what we had fallen into that I didn't recognize was so critical for me, even in those stages. And I was still a stay-at-home mama. And so I mentioned this because there were multiple life changes happening at one point, and I was still expecting so much of myself. I was still expecting to be the good mother that I had seen my mother being from my own childhood experience. I was expecting to basically be patient and kind and compassionate and loving and energetic, even through all of these huge life changes. It was around that time when I was home full time with them, 3 years old and 9 months. And in the following months, when my mental wellness, my mental health really took a dive, and that is when the anger and the rage and the anxiety really showed up. And it was debilitating in the sense that I was really apprehensive to go many places with the girls. It was just such a dark and heavy time. And I was never an angry mama before I had my daughters. I was, as you see me now, Sam, across the screen, I was very joyful and smiley and energetic and positive and playful. And in that season of motherhood, that is not at all, I had no connection to that part of me. I was self-sacrificing to the point of just complete and utter exhaustion. I had completely neglected myself. And in the following years, I say years because it really was until about my youngest was two, around the age when she was two and my oldest was four, I had a particularly scary and almost out of body rageful episode. We had just gotten back from a trip as a family. We were at a lake cabin for a week. And there was very little sleep. I was not taking good care of my body. I had started to take better care of myself. But when we came back, we were home together and we were unpacking and getting back settled. And I don't remember what the trigger was, but it had something to do with what I was thinking about and how I was feeling. And I just got more and more angry and more caught up and just how frustrated I was or resentful. And ultimately, in that space, I remember telling my husband, or we had some kind of conversation about him leaving the house with the girls to go take them somewhere, to go do something with them. And I just got more and more furious. And I found myself throwing our dinner plates in the kitchen sink in a fit of rage and breaking them over and over. And it was terrifying. It was terrifying for me, and it was terrifying for my family. And that was my rock bottom moment. That was the moment where I realized, and I had thought this before, but it just became so clear to me in that moment, that no one was coming to save me. That I was responsible for my happiness. I was responsible for who I wanted to be, not only as a mother, but as a woman. And it was in that moment and the days after that, that I really sought out the help that I needed, that I desperately needed. And had needed for some time. But for whatever reason, it took me getting to that rock bottom moment to say, something needs to change. And that begins with me.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. And I know you tell your story and you have told your story a lot, but I still always thank people for telling their story again, because we can have so much judgment on ourselves telling our stories and worry about criticism from others. And we'll come on to that in a minute. But I just want to thank you for sharing that, honestly. And I can really feel the emotion in that. And I can almost go back to that time with you and feel how it was for you. So there's a few questions that we could unpack in this to understand that period in your life. Before we go on to questions I want to ask about the particular experiences and what prevented you from asking for help, I just want to go back and talk about that initial period with your second daughter and those feelings and the help you sought with the acupuncturist, and how that contrasted with your first daughter, and where do you think the differences were in perhaps the two births? and those experiences after the birth?
After the birth of my first daughter, it was summertime. And it was, as a first-time mom, I didn't know, like I hadn't established kind of a normal for me with motherhood. And as I referenced earlier, I had dove into that with everything, all of my being. And I thought that in order to love her, I need to give everything to her. And I remember when the nurse was coming the several weeks, multiple times after she was born, I remember her asking me questions, like if I was feeling anxious or if I was feeling anything. She was asking me some questions to draw out how I was feeling. And I remember hesitating, and I don't even think that I spoke, that I was feeling some anxiety because I didn't even recognize that was my feeling within me. Because again, like we've talked about, Sam, like so much of this, we're not hearing the stories. We're not hearing what's going on behind the scenes in motherhood. And so I did have a lot of anxiety present with my first. But I did very little to take care of myself during my daughter's first year and a half, 2.5 years of life, because of the guilt trap, because of my expectations of myself and who I thought I needed to be in order to be the good mother. So by the time that my second came, I was like so not only physically depleted from giving birth, but I was emotionally and mentally depleted. I felt I was essentially like a shell of a person because I hadn't properly taken care of myself, especially when I think about how I take care of myself now. And so I think that the difference in how I felt physically after the birth of my second, when that depression really sank in, it's hard to describe in words because it was such a felt sense of heaviness and hopelessness in my body with the postpartum depression. And although I felt deeply connected to my baby, I didn't want to be there. It felt like far too much for me to handle. And I do remember specifically at one point, I was nursing my daughter in bed. And I think it was like, yeah, it was bedtime. And we were all sleeping in the same room. We were like, had this huge bed. We were co-sleeping. And I was crying as I was nursing my daughter. And my husband said, "What's wrong?" And I said, I'm so desperately overwhelmed. And so I hope that answers your question a little bit, but it was really, I think, multi-layered. And again, just not recognizing that in order for me to take really good care of my daughters and be who I desired to be, I also needed to take care of myself.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, that really does make sense. It sounds like they're just the multi-layered, consistent depletion, adding another baby, not recognizing signs, going from 0 to 1 was different because you'd had more time to look after yourself and then coming into the second. So yeah, that really makes sense. And then why do you think it took you so long? And that isn't a judgment loaded question, because we know there's lots of reading for this, but for you personally, why do you feel like it took you as long as it did, shall we say, to seek out help? It got to the point where you were smashing those plates in the sink. And you said a few days later, it was then I started to get the help I needed. Why do you think it took until that literal breaking point to reach out for that help?
I also think that's multi-layered. And first, when I think back to that time frame, and this is about 4 years ago now, which is hard to believe because in some ways it feels like yesterday, there was just so much shame present for me and embarrassment. I was trying so hard to hold on to this facade of I'm a happy, awesome mother. When in the inside, I hated myself and I hated who I had become. And I really felt so determined. I am a very determined individual, and I felt very determined that I could figure it out on my own without needing medication, without needing significant time to myself, without needing a break from my girls. I was still home with them so much of the time. And I was in a community that I didn't know a lot of people, and I didn't have a lot of babysitters, and I was just so fearful. There was so much fear there and judgment, self-judgment. So I think, again, it was multi-layered, and I feel as the rage, the anger and the rage initially showed up when we lived in Iowa. And it was my birthday. One of my first rageful moments was on my birthday. And it wasn't as significant as breaking my dinner plate, but it was slamming things and screaming. And then I'd have another rageful episode maybe 3 months later, where I would throw something against the wall, or that I might slam a door. And then, so it was showing up. And so I did seek out help. I did seek out therapy because I knew that I needed support in that way. And I had a therapist in Iowa. So I sought out a therapist in Minnesota, did a lot of looking at the past, what's going on, my own childhood trauma, blah, blah, blah. I did seek out acupuncture and I tried that. I was doing that. I was doing my best to get better sleep. But I think what was so significant for me, Sam, was recognizing that like I was helping myself, but it wasn't what my body needed. Like I needed a reset. And ultimately, I found that in a combination of things. And for me, that was sleep, like significant sleep, quality sleep, time alone, consistent time alone, like therapy or coaching, and then medication. And there is so much stigma and shame around medication. And I did my own podcast episode around that because for me, that was a huge reason why I didn't seek that out. And it's something I had thought about multiple times, but I was so terrified of being, quote unquote, that mama who needs medication because she can't handle it. And I just was so proud. I just didn't want to have to go that route. But I was holding myself back from healing. And it was really life-changing when I gave myself permission. And I talk so much about that in my own work, is the permission that we give ourselves to do what we need to do, regardless of other people's opinions, regardless of, you know, what our mothers, sisters, friends say. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of commitment to your own well-being to give yourself that permission to do what you need to do.
Yeah. Yeah, it really does. That permission is huge, isn't it? And I think, and this isn't putting in any way, shape or form, putting the responsibility or blame on ourselves, because that is absolutely not the case, but that is often the first step. Once we can move that block out of our way, acknowledging where we are, giving ourselves permission, that's when the release comes. But until we do that, because exactly as you said earlier on, nobody else is going to come and save me. I really resonate with that because I remember thinking, searching, looking around, who's going to help me? Where are the answers? And exactly as you said, like nobody's going to come and save me. So when outside of therapy, paid practitioners, how did you find the relationship with your partner? Did you find support from them and others in your community? Or where did you find that support outside of, as I said, external professional support?
That's a great question. And as I think back to that time, I certainly had support from my spouse, but that relationship was also very strained because when we moved to Minnesota in that first year, he was working from home. And it was really challenging because I felt super resentful because I was unhappy in my role as a stay-at-home mom, but I hadn't yet, again, given myself permission to speak that. And so I was living in this space of dreading my days ahead. And here he was in the basement working away and like doing his own thing. And he was not feeling what I was feeling. And we had our own dynamic going on. So yes, he was always supportive and he still is to this day. And especially in being willing to sleep with our girls so that I could get sleep, being willing to take them places so that I could have time alone at home, being willing to make meals and run errands and all of those things. So in that sense, he's always been so supportive. As far as my like extended circle of family and friends, there was no one who really knew what was going on with me personally in terms of my anger and rage and unhappiness in motherhood. I was just so embarrassed again to talk about it because especially one of my best friends here in Minnesota, she loves motherhood and she always has, and she hasn't struggled as I did. And so it was really hard for me to open up to her because I didn't feel like I felt less than, and I felt like something was wrong with me, which is another theme I think so often that comes up in motherhood is what's wrong with me that I can't figure this out. Like my sister and I were not very close at that point in time, and I definitely didn't share anything with my mother. And so I think a huge theme that you can probably hear that I haven't said yet that I thought of earlier is I was so isolated. I had isolated myself. And so there were just a few people who I felt comfortable reaching out to, and I did. My sister-in-law, who was the doula at both of our home births, I ultimately reached out to her and talked to her about how I was feeling. And I also reached out to a friend who doesn't have kids and who has always just been so loving and supportive of anything that I've ever shared with her. And so I felt safe going to her. But I had very few mama friends in my life, including my sister and my mother, who I felt comfortable going to or that I felt like I was receiving support from. And a huge part of that was because I wasn't sharing. They could see me struggling. They could see my anger. They could see my irritability, my anxiety, my unhappiness. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And it really highlights those relationships that we have in our life that perhaps we expect those to be able to go to those people. And actually, we've been close with these people. We've had them in our lives, family or close friends, and actually they can't support us in the ways that we need. And it shows the importance of having that wide network and wider community, because some people can't support us in the ways that we need because they've got their own stuff, or they can't help us in a particular ways that we're going through. And I'm so glad that you had that friend, especially you really lit up when you spoke about her and how she's always supported you in the things that you've done. So that's why community is so important, and we're so fractured. And that's part of my mission, really, to, and I don't know, it's a mission of yours to improve that community and lack of connection that we sadly have now. I just want to move back to the way that you reset. And I really, you're really clear about how you were able to move through this anger and overwhelm, recognizing it, first of all, acknowledging it, giving yourself permission to talk about it. And those lucid sleep, alone time, therapy and medication were the four things that helped you move through. So fast forward to today, and you are thriving in motherhood. You have your own business. So I'd like to hear how, on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, those tangible things that you do to support yourself and help yourself thrive, not just survive in motherhood.
Mm-hmm. No, thank you for asking that question. This is one of my favorite things to talk about, especially related to motherhood. And Sam, I'm sure you can relate to this, but it feels a little bit like revolutionary, like you had said earlier, or a little bit of a rebel, because our society and our culture just doesn't highlight how important and necessary it is in motherhood to prioritize your well-being. And I think something that I haven't shared yet about my journey is that when I started to take more time alone for myself, I spent so much of that time alone in the woods. We have some walking trails here just outside our front door and some beautiful, like a nature paradise. And it changes with the seasons. And it is really where I found myself in nature. And so I'm such a huge fan of spending time in nature. And it doesn't have to obviously be a day-to-day thing, but I would put a podcast in my ear typically, and I was listening at that time, four-ish, three-ish years ago, that was sharing stories from mothers who were putting themselves first and making their needs the number one priority, which for me was just like such a revelation. And I thought, how can that actually be a like a good thing for your family to put yourself first? Aren't you supposed to be putting your kids first? And as I was listening to these stories and hearing mama share about how incredible their lives were by prioritizing their needs, I could not get enough of that. And so that's what I slowly started to implement for myself and to see, to witness how taking care, really good care of me was actually the best thing for my family. Because when I left the house and went for a walk, let's say for an hour in the woods, I came back feeling more energized and more ready to be with my family and to show up for my girls. And then I need to go and do something else. And so today, to answer your question, still walking in the woods is a huge part of taking care of me. I do that, depending on the weather, almost daily. And it doesn't have to be a long time. Sometimes it's just a quick loop around, which is about 20 minutes. But getting outside and moving my body is so important to me. And it just feels really good. I start my morning every morning with me time. So I naturally just get up early because I go to bed early because I love to get sleep, which is also part of it. So getting up early and having a morning practice, and that's about maybe 20 minutes or so before my girls come in and snuggle with me. So I have that time to connect with myself before I jump into the day. I have made a habit of, and it's funny because I have these notes up still, of asking myself, what do I need right now? So when I've created a lot of self-awareness in my body, and when I sense that I'm starting to feel, maybe I'm thinking about something like, God, this sucks. Or like my daughter is getting upset about something and I'm noticing that I'm starting to feel some anxiety or some anxiousness or something inside of me is like getting activated. Then I can self-soothe and ask myself, what do I need to support myself in this moment so that I can show up and be the mama that I desire to be? Body awareness is something that I lean into every day. Nervous system regulation, that's something that has become very prevalent, I feel, especially in social media, talking about nervous system regulation. Feeding my body good foods, drinking liquids, water throughout the day, staying hydrated, leaning into joy, things that I enjoy, certainly growing my business and supporting mamas in creating lives that they love is just so fulfilling. And so that's something else that I do for myself. And as much as I can, I try to stretch before bed. That comes and goes. But those are some of the things. And it, as I talk about it now, it sounds like quite a bit. But I am thriving. And I'm thriving because I take really good care of myself. And I don't feel weird or selfish saying that, because I truly can be the mother that I desire to be. And that is, I am kind and I'm patient and I'm respectful and I'm compassionate because I take really good care of myself.
Wow. Thank you. That was really beautiful. The way that you talked us through what you do and when you do it. And really at the end there, just talking about yourself and the beauty that you, the words that you use to describe yourself, it just shows how much self-love you have and the self-worth that you have for yourself now, in contrast to those earlier days when you, at one point you said, I just felt so empty inside. And those words that you described yourself with just really gave me tingles just to think, oh gosh, how amazing it sounds. The way you're describing it feels to thrive is fantastic, because surely everybody wants a little bit of that, or a lot of that, if we can get it. And
I love the way that you really talk about that connection to nature and going into your woods, and when that first podcast inspired you whilst you're in there. So number one, thank, and I love the way that you really talk about, give us the tangible ways that you look after yourself. But just going back to that podcast and hearing those inspiring stories from other women, and we do need that inspiration. We do need those, and I'm going to put it in inverted commas, role models, because it doesn't have to be anything that we consider profound, does it? It's sometimes just somebody you hearing we need to hear these stories, don't we? A friend going away for a few nights on her own, or whatever it may be. It doesn't even have to be as huge as that. But if we don't hear other people and see other women doing this, we sometimes as women, we feel like we need permission to do it, don't we? We feel like we need that permission. And I hope by hearing your stories, your story, that other mothers will feel that. But just going back to that, again, that first podcast and hearing those other women, was it easy to hear, oh, these women, oh, they are implementing and putting themselves first? How easy was it to do initially to start putting yourself first? Can you talk us through that little part of the journey? Big part of the journey. It is a big part of the journey.
It is such a huge part of the journey. The how is always present and the guilt is present. And it was really hard for me. It was really hard for me to think about, quote unquote, putting myself first. And even today, it strikes me as, it just strikes a chord in me that is a little different from when I initially started thinking about it. It was hard for me then because I was so caught up in the story that I had created and that I felt like I was seeing around me, that, again, in order to be the good mother, you are always present. You are always meeting everyone else's needs. And this is also so important, I think, Sam, that by giving more, I will receive. So I was giving and giving, and there's this idea of pouring from an empty cup, which is essentially what was happening. But I was giving and giving and expecting that would be, that would fill my tank back up, but it actually wasn't. And so it was like, again, multi-layered in terms of recognizing that wasn't working so well. So like getting really honest with myself and saying, okay, what you've been doing, self-sacrificing and putting yourself on the back burner, has actually not been helping. So how can I, what can I do that I feel safe doing somewhat consistently? And I think when I say safe, I can give myself permission to do it. And I'll do it because I know that my girls are with their dad and they're having a good time. Or I've just nursed my little one, or she's just been fed and I can leave for an hour and feel like totally okay that she's not going to be hungry. And I think for every person, every mama, this looks a little bit different depending on your circumstances as far as what you feel comfortable doing for you in the season of motherhood that you're in. And so as I started to just really dip my toe into what does this look like for me to make my needs a priority, as I continue to, so first it was really just walking in the neighborhood and listening to a podcast and during a time that worked really well for our family. And then it was also shifting the sleep situation because we did that when my youngest was like one, because she wasn't nursing through the night anymore. And so it really happened incrementally. And I also started surrounding myself just like with that podcast, like in real life, a little bit more on social media, surrounding myself with mamas who were working towards making their needs a priority or already had. Like you said, Sam, the mama who said, I'm going away for the weekend. That was like, whoa, that's a little bit too much for me right now, but I totally want to be in that space at some point. So hopefully that answers your question, yeah. But it was really incremental. And I'm glad I didn't try to like do too much at one time, because I think that would have backfired on me and I would have just given up. And there were certainly times where I was like, I felt like I needed to leave the house, but I didn't give myself permission. And then shit would hit the fan and I would have a rageful episode or something, because the rage was stuck around for a while. It took time for that to dissipate. And I haven't had a rageful episode now for multiple years, but I have anger. There's anger is a healthy emotion. It's just how we express it. And it's a really important message. But yeah.
Thank you. Yes, you did answer it really beautifully. And as I answered it so beautifully, because it's, we see so much messaging now. Again, put the responsibility on the mother, self-care, look after yourself. Why aren't you looking after yourself? You need to do more self-care. And it really makes me, well, cringe and be fearful, because it's just another message to blame the mother almost on, you're feeling like this and it's your fault because you're not doing anything to take care of it. And that is, as we said, it's so multifaceted. And you said it was incremental. It was small steps. And it's sometimes however many steps forward and then some steps back. It's not a linear path. Exactly as you said, you still had those rageful episodes, but you can see now, having worked through that and increased the way that you look after yourself and all the support that you've had, of how you're now able to thrive. But it's not just a deciding and the next day or the next week, it's, oh, I'm never going to be rageful again. Because as you said, it's important to acknowledge anger is a normal emotion, but everything that comes up behind that and the way we deal with it is another thing. Thank you, Alison. That was such a beautiful conversation. And I think there's so many mothers I know that will resonate with this and with this story. It's sadly a common theme of overwhelm, of anxiety, of depression, of not feeling ourselves, of all of it. Of the overwhelm is really one of the biggest words I can think of that we talk about, isn't it? It's just that heaviness of everything. And hopefully that these stories will at least give some glimmers of light and hope to show that you can move through this and you can then thrive in motherhood. For anybody that's listening that's really feeling in the depths of that overwhelm, Alison is a beautiful example of how she's really moved through that. And how I wish you could see Alison's smiling face while she's been speaking and I've been talking, just showing how she's thriving. Alison, thank you so much for coming on. I have one last main question for you. What would you say, what would you like to say to that early newborn mother that was experiencing that complete overwhelm after the birth of your second daughter and as you were in that real intense period?
Thank you so much, Sam. This has been an incredible conversation with you, and I'm so grateful for the safe space that you've held for me to share and be honest about my own experience. Gosh, when I think back and really feel into my heart for the mamas who have a newborn babe, and maybe they have more than one kiddo and they're feeling that overwhelm. And I just want to say, mama, you are so loved. You are not alone. You are not the only one who is feeling this overwhelm. It is a lot. It is so much to hold, but you don't have to hold it alone. And as much as you can, lean into your courage and your bravery and your self-worth and know that trust that in taking just a little bit of time or caring for yourself in small ways will make such a significant difference in your well-being. And that it may take time and you may try and it may not work out so well, but don't give up. Don't give up and seek out mamas like Sam and like me who are here to love you and support you and provide you resources so that you can feel better and you can feel like you're moving towards thriving and not just surviving.
That was so beautiful. I just love that upstairs mama energy that you brought into that. She's just, you'd make anybody feel safe when they came to you. So thank you again, Alison. So where can our listeners find you?
Yeah. So I'm on Instagram at I am Alison Ryan, Alison with one L. I'm also a hosting a free Facebook group that's called For the Mamas. And it's really supporting mamas who are especially challenged or struggling with anger and rage in motherhood. And I'm also on Facebook at Alison Jane Ryan.
Thank you. Brilliant. Thank you so much, Alison. Take care.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoy this conversation and would like to support the podcast so we can reach as many mothers as possible, please share it with your mama friends or leave a rating and review. Sign up for the Confident Comeback newsletter, your regular dose of honesty, support and inspiration for navigating your return to work. And with no hustle harder or productivity hacked in sight, head over to my website, motherscood.co.uk, for more information. See you next time.